If you're enjoying this podcast, please leave us a review and tap the follow button so that you never miss an episode.
Evan Clark is the executive director of Atheists United. He is a humanist entrepreneur, political consultant, and public speaker with over 14 years experience tinkering with secular communities. Evan is also the founder and creative director of Spectrum Experiences LLC, the North American coordinator for Young Humanists International, and California State Director for American Atheists. I don't know where he finds time. Previously, he was the chair of the Secular Student Alliance Board of Directors, co-host of the Humanist Experience podcast, and co-founder of the Humanist Community of Ventura County. I believe that's California. He is also the founder of the Atheist Street Pirates, which I am sure we're going to hear about tonight. Welcome, Evan.
Great. Thanks for having me.
Thank you for joining us. I am so excited to get to talk with you. I was mentioning earlier to the other co-hosts that we have mentioned the Atheist Street Pirates once or twice before on this program, and I was hoping that we would get to do a whole episode where we learn more about them, and that time has come, and I am so excited to learn about this because Rob actually let me know that we just missed International, is it Talk Like a Pirate Day?
Yes, last Tuesday.
Yes. So this is very timely. So this is this tonight's episode is not RFRX. It's RFRX. Yeah. The puns are not going to get any better from me, but we would love to have some help in the chat. Give us your best pirate puns, please.
Have you seen Bob Flockmeister's photo there?
Yes. I love the pirate photo.
Wow.
This is excellent. Costumes encouraged. I've got my flying spaghetti monster on. That's all I could muster since I'm not even home yet from the excursion. But Evan, welcome. Tell us about yourself. Tell us about Atheists United and these street pirates. What in the world are atheist street pirates?
Sure. Yeah. Well, don't let me talk about myself too long. I will talk forever. I'm as self-centered as anyone else. But the Atheist United was founded in 1982 as a community in Southern California for atheists, agnostics, and other non-religious people. It's one of the oldest communities on the West Coast for atheists. And in 2019, I was hired as their first executive director. So I'm one of the only paid atheists in the world who actually get to build community and figure out what community can look like for atheists, try to figure out how we organize politically, and really center the people that are atheists, not just the ideas of atheism. So I think when most people think of a famous atheist, they can name a bunch of authors who like to talk and write all day about atheism. But our communities are organizations around people. Our advocacy organizations are groups that service people. RFR is an organization that services people. And that to me is a much more interesting question. You know, I solved the God question a long time ago. I've been identifying as an atheist since sixth grade, I think, is when I found the word. And the real question to me is how we, you know, raise children in communities, how we fight climate change in communities, how we build support systems and rituals and serve each other in times of needs, because life is hard. And if you strip religion of all of its spirituality, a lot of religious institutions still are the people who show up at the hospital when you're sick, who will help you raise your kids, maybe not with ethical ideas, but will help you raise your kids. Could be your dating network when you move to a new city, right? Like, we all have a base understanding, especially this community, of what religion can serve at, even in a secular sense. And some of those, until we build better societal systems, have to be done in community. We have to rebuild our own nonprofit communities. We have to go out and do service work and help our community. You know, and until our government decides it's going to solve homelessness and solve hunger, you know, we're going to have religious organizations that are going to be competing to hold power over people's lives in that space. And so we have to step up to give them secular alternatives and secular options. And atheists and secular communities are the best ones positioned to do that. And then the Atheist Street Pirates is a program that came out of our community during the pandemic. So again, I took this job in 2019. I had no idea there was a pandemic coming within a year of me taking that job. And right when I feel like I'm starting to get my feet under me and getting a sense of how this community is going, we get hit with the pandemic and have to move everything online, you know, shut down the 10 or 15 events we were doing a month. And after a few months in the pandemic around winter that year, I'd gotten a few complaints from people in our community. People had written in and said, there's this highway overpass with this big Jesus sign. It just says like Jesus or hell or something. Like, can you help me report that to the city? And we actually did that. We sent emails to the city a few times saying, hey, here's the sign. What we started to notice is those signs didn't come down quickly. The city wasn't really paying attention and immediately responding and taking those signs down, even though they're obviously illegal. You can hold a sign until you're blue in the face, but the second you leave it on a bridge, you now have trash. You've left trash behind. And then finally, what got me to create the program was on, I think it was Christmas. I went to get Chinese food, like a good atheist does on Christmas. And outside of this Chinese food restaurant, I think it was in Hollywood, on a palm tree, somebody had stapled into the palm tree a Jesus sign. And when I really thought about it, I figured out that they were probably targeting Jews on Christmas who get Chinese food. They probably were targeting people like me, you know, non-theists who are not Christian. And I got really angry because it didn't feel like this innocuous thing anymore. It suddenly felt like a targeted propaganda. They couldn't let me be secular. And that's when we started talking about, well, we need things to do during the pandemic. I bet some of us could go around and take down these signs and help the city clean them up. And so we created a Slack channel. We started talking about ways to do it. We got some safety vests. And within a year, we'd taken down about 100 signs. And then we got some media attention and the whole thing took off from there. And this was just Los Angeles. So today I have volunteers in 20 states. We have, I think, 2,000 signs almost. Captain Graybeard is here today. He's one of our leaders, can actually give the stats. And actually, if you can, Captain Graybeard, drop some stats in the chat for us today. We now keep good data on the signs we track. We have a map on our website with over 2,000 pins of different signs we've spotted across the United States. And our goal is to track and remove illegal religious propaganda. And each one of those three words matter, and we've worked our butt off to try to define those. But ultimately, these signs are put up and left like trash in a city. Almost every city in the country has ordinance around trash, and we also happen to have a First Amendment. It's pretty strong when the courts, you know, decide to defend it. And then propaganda, these are clearly signs with an intention. These are not signs that just are, I don't know, like they're designed to convert people, to harass people, or build kind of a Christian normativity or theist normativity in our society to where you are not welcome if you are not of that religious sect.
Do you think there is compliance going on amongst the people who would be responsible for taking them down? You know, if you're a Christian, you don't think there's anything wrong with people putting up Christian signs, or, you know, if you're Jewish, you like the Jewish signs up there. Is that a problem?
Yeah, so this is one of, I think, the great questions we had to ask when we were starting this program, because there's two paths for how you can go about this. The first is everyone can put up whatever sign they want, and I'm just going to put up my signs as well, right? We suddenly have this kind of religious arms race for signage. And there's a few problems with that. First, we're definitely going to lose. second, it leads to just a messier world, right? Like it's the difference between secular in the pure sense and religious freedom, where religion is still privileged and you can't opt out from religion. I think this is the debate we have about the Satanic Temple strategy. Ultimately, they are playing a religion to fight religious privilege. But those of us that identify as atheists are often trying to take ourselves off of the religious spectrum. We're not trying to just say we're a different religion. We are not religious. And by taking ourselves off the spectrum, just like being, you know, non-binary rather than picking a gender, you're questioning the whole idea that there should be privilege attached to this spectrum. And so, like most atheist organizations historically, we're taking the classic secular separation of church and state stance, which is the only way to truly build equality for all is for it to be a secular space. This is why our courthouses and our schools, we make sure are secular. We don't let an arms race of signs happen in those. We sue immediately and make sure nobody gets privileged in those spaces, because that's the only way that anyone can actually be equal in those spaces. So we do find that there are people that like some of these signs. Sure. You know, there are atheists that might like atheist signs, but our argument is whether it's an atheist sign, a Christian sign, a Buddhist sign, or whatever, they all deserve to come down because our laws are secular. Our laws are not, you know, they don't promote signage. They are actually designed to keep us all welcome.
Do you ever find signage that, like the kind of stuff that was witnessed by people carrying when they stormed the Capitol, which were, you know, political and religious all together?
Yeah, so we have a lot of examples of that. I actually want to cite one example specifically. There's a guy in North Carolina who's become a full-time street preacher. He travels the country and puts his signs up illegally high on telephone poles. He uses a huge extending pole and usually puts them about 20 to 30 feet up in the air. And we have tracked almost 1,000 of his signs that he's put up around the country. And he is the yellow and black Jesus Save sign that you saw when you were watching the January 6th insurrection. And you noticed a bunch of these yellow signs in the crowd that said Jesus Saves. It was his sign. He had supporters that were in the crowd that day handing out his sign. We have collected hundreds of them in our community already. I have about 20 of them in my office right now, just from a Southern California plunder we've done. We recently did a pirate party, which I can talk about in a second. And we did a whole like expose on this guy and the signs he's done. And recently, every time we get press, because we usually don't know who's putting the signs up, he's the only one that the press can find that is openly telling people he's putting them up. So he's actually been the counter in a lot of our interviews of late. So he knows about us and we know about him.
Oh, wow. Okay. So Ted Ann posted, this is the person you were talking about.
Yeah. We've got a captain in the chat and helps us with data and is posting some data in the chat.
Yeah. So do you want to read those for people who are going to watch this later and don't see the chat?
Sure. Yeah, so if you go to our website, atheistunited.org/streetpirates, you're going to find a map. And on that map, we have thousands of different dots on it. And on those dots, we have a few different signages. One is a red circle with a different religious symbol in it. Those are active signs that someone has spotted and is still there. That means if you live in that region and you spot that dot, you can actually go and visit it and tell us if it's still there and maybe remove it. We have little krakens, little octopus-looking symbols. Those are signs that we have investigated and are no longer there. We don't know what got rid of them. It could have been the weather. It could have been somebody needed shelter and they took that sign. It could have been the city that took it down. But we don't have knowledge of what happened, and so we like to say the kraken got it.
I was wondering about that. I thought maybe it was 750 sightings of Sidney Powell.
Kraken, yeah.
At least the Kraken lady.
And then finally, we have plunders. These are signs that a street pirate has taken down. Someone in our community who identifies with our group has actually gone out of their way and taken down the sign and removed it on their own. So this wasn't the city. This wasn't the weather. This is something that we have claimed as pirates of the secular seas. And in Los Angeles, for instance, we've collected them all. I have over 250 in my office right now that we saved for events. And I'll read the stats real quick. We have 2,550 total signs on our map. 1,000 of those have been plundered. 750 have been gone through the krakening. 675 are active and you could probably find right now. And we also have a section called questionable legality. We found some signs that were unsure if they're on public or private land. We're unsure if the city was involved in putting them up. And they might be legal, they might not be legal. So some of those we pass on to legal organizations like Freedom From Religion Foundation and American Atheists. Some of those we're currently investigating, and you know, most of our volunteers didn't sign up to do like land research law work, but we're learning a lot very quickly.
have the volunteers who actually plundered the signs ever met resistance by either the group that put them up just happened to be in the area or someone else, you know, saying, hey, leave that there?
Yeah, so we've never actually had a confrontation so far. What's fascinating is we're starting to find locations where signs return. We have a bridge here in Los Angeles that I think we've had 20 signs that we've taken down. So we do know there's some locations that people are returning to. And if we keep returning to, there's a higher probability we might run into them. I think I'm one of two people that have ever actually had a live interaction with somebody while I was taking one down. And it was very awkward and very quick. And they were a supporter of the sign, and they were like, why are you taking those down? And I, you know, of course, like freeze up and forgot to like take out my phone and film them and ask why, you know, they support illegal signage. But yeah, ultimately, we haven't had anything that would be highly confrontational. And we actually train our volunteers on how to avoid that. So we have encouraged or advised or given out safety vests for all of our volunteers. This is a tip for all of you just in life. If you wear a safety vest, people don't mess with you. This is just like 99 out of 100 times, if you are wearing a safety vest, you can get away with whatever you're trying to do. So we encourage people to wear a safety vest. We encourage them to bring safe tools. We encourage them to go in groups. We encourage them to go during daylight. And those alone have, I think, kept us away from any major confrontations. But we do know that the signs that are being put up are sometimes the same signs we see by street preachers. So for instance, in Los Angeles, I've been at the Santa Monica Pier before and seen them holding the signs that I then see on bridges. So we do know there are real people putting these up, and they are continuing to put them up over time. At least in LA, we're seeing the same bridges with same signs sometimes for, you know, multiple times a year. So no confrontation yet. I don't want confrontation. That's not the goal of this program.
No. And so how do you determine, someone was actually asking, and this is an interesting question in the chat, are the religious signs prohibited federally, or is it a state law, or does it differ depending on where people live? Will there be different rules about what kind of signs can be present in my neighborhood versus your neighborhood or Rob's neighborhood? And how do we know?
We as street pirates start from the position that they're all illegal because of the First Amendment, right? If the First Amendment can protect a school and a courthouse, we think it can protect the roads and our telephone poles. But when it comes to actual statute, you're usually looking at local ordinance. You're looking at your city of Los Angeles, city of New York, city of Charlottesville. And those cities will have laws around signage. Every city in America has some type of signage law usually. Or they have some type of trash law. It's about marketing and trash. And so if you're really looking for the code, that's probably where you should look first. We, in the beginning, were starting to look up code in most cities, and we were finding the same language everywhere for the most part. The only time we really spend time looking at that now is when we spot international signs. We're trying to figure out if they have similar laws in Canada and France, because we've now found signs in those countries, which was unexpected for us. So overall, we feel strongly that we're on the correct side of the First Amendment, and that we also have local ordinance, if not state law, on our side as well. So I've had a few lawyers I've spoken to, and they've all been like, yeah, pretty sure this is good. But as far as we can tell, there's no lawsuits that have happened around a fight like this. It'd be terrifying if there was a lawsuit like this and religion was allowed to pollute our streets without regulation. Essentially, if they were privileged to be able to put messaging on any street at any time, we would have no right to stop them. Your city wouldn't have a right to stop them. And we would have no choice but to go to the religious arms race model that I was talking about originally.
That sounds terrible and very junky looking. Like, we don't need signs cluttering up everywhere. Like, can we have less of that, please?
Yeah.
And so to be clear, you're not talking about like the big billboards that people will actually pay to have, that they'll rent that billboard with whatever message they want to put on it about Jesus loves you or whatever. That's not part of
it. I'm actually going to post in our chat a link to the Atheist Street Pirate website, because we actually describe a little bit of what we do. We have a little poem, kind of a Hoy Me Hearties kind of like thing about what we do. And it's really critical that we're targeting illegal religious propaganda. You, as a religious person, as a secular person, as a human being in American society, have a right to buy a billboard. And you can put almost anything on it as long as the billboard company will let you put that on it. If you own a church or you own private land, you can put almost anything you want on that land in accordance to local and state law. So We do not target that. If we find a church puts up a sign we don't like, that's fine. You know, we as atheists could buy our own building and put up a sign they don't like. And yes, I've driven cross country many times. I've been through Ohio and Missouri and Kansas and seen all of the abortion ads. Those are completely legal, unfortunately. Not unfortunately. I think it's actually fortunate that those are legal. It's unfortunate how funded they are and how disgusting those messages are. And ultimately, if we're going to support free speech, we have to find ways to just fight that with free speech. But when it comes to secular law, separation of church and state, when it comes to the protection of our eyeballs and our streets against religious privilege, that's where we set sail as pirates.
So let me ask you, we talked about this a little on the pregame and the pre-show. The only time I've encountered something like this was perhaps worse than a sign which I could ignore, which was a street preacher with a boombox on the corner of Philadelphia, yep, blaring his message of damnation and hellfire louder than I would believe OSHA should allow, even. But, yeah, you know, besides that, it's like, do you guys ever try to fight that kind of a thing?
Yeah, so that's a different focus and a different program. There's a community here in Southern California called Backyard Skeptics that's been around for 20 years. And one of their programs, they used to go counter protest Ray Comfort at the beach in Southern California. If any of you don't know Ray Comfort, he's a famous evangelical preacher. He's got some really terrible ideas about evolution.
At the protest, did they throw bananas at him?
I don't know. No. Actually, they became friends with him. They saw him so often. You know, this was pre-Trump. I think that's what split their relationship. But what we find is, you know, counter-protesting can be a goal of an organization. It can be a program you do with a community. But you have to think about what the aim is with that, right? What is your target audience and what is your aim? And so most communities I've been a part of where I build atheist communities for humanists and for atheists, the need isn't to be told that religious people are wrong. We've already figured that out, right? The need isn't necessarily to convert other people to non-religious identity, right? We're then kind of falling into their argument that the most important thing we can do is conversion. When in reality, I think the largest need we have is the millions and millions of atheists that already exist and figuring out what community looks like for them. Someone else's job can be to convert people out of atheism. There's tons of podcasts for that. I, as a community organizer, I'm trying to figure out how we like help you survive this world with student life, student loan debt, with climate change, with growing children, moving to new areas, being single, like, you know, how do you, places to do community service? Like, these are all interesting questions that I think we still need to solve in secular spaces for people with secular identities, especially if you have religious trauma and come from hyper-religious backgrounds. And that need to me is greater than counter-protesting a lot of these people. So there are groups that do it. You're welcome to, and I'll, you know, I'll throw you a high five if I see you doing it, but our community has chosen tactics that I think are more productive for our community.
Well, I love that too, because it's kind of like you'll see other charitable organizations doing things like adopting a mile of highway to clean up. And this is basically what you're doing. You're cleaning up trash off the side of the road.
Yeah. And honestly, when we get critiqued, if you ever look at the comments of any of the press we get, it's always like, oh, why are you targeting religious things? Like, why don't you just go clean the highways? I'm like, well, we've had a highway cleanup for 20 years. Like, we're a 40-year-old community, and 20 of those we've had an active highway. We actually have two here in Los Angeles. We're, you know, the 405. We're literally on like the busiest highway in America. That's fine. We do that, but we can also extend that into things that we're subject experts on, like religious privilege. And ultimately, these signs matter. And I think this community will understand that better than almost any that I've spoken to. If you have religious trauma, if you are raising a child that is not of the predominant religion, and you have to drive a highway every day that has a sign that says Jesus or hell, that can be triggering. That can be.
I saw that one on your website. That's particularly egregious.
Yeah. And these signs often don't get taken down for 6 months to a year by the city. We found one sign in Los Angeles that hadn't been taken down for 6 years before we took it down. We found one sign outside of LA that had been up for 10 years. It's more rural. I don't think anyone even knew that one was there except for us. But We're finding that these signs, without interventions, the cities either don't have the resources, don't have the attention, or support these. And so we have to do our own form of advocacy until we can get our governments and municipalities to care about this at the same level we do.
What are the most egregious signs that you've, like people have posted about street preachers preaching about, homosexuality? Like, do you see signs about that kind of thing? Anti-LGBTQ for religion? Do they do that?
Absolutely. Yeah, we've taken down quite a few Proud Boys signs at this point. Those are usually the most disgusting. We've actually found that those come down really quick, even without us. Society doesn't like the Proud Boys, come to find out, which is good to
know.
Can't
imagine why.
So there's some really disgusting white pride, anti-LGBT. The anti-abortion ads have gotten the nastiest, and there are a lot of conspiracy theorists in that space who have started to post their own things. We're tracking one or two right now that keep posting in Southern California. These leads to questions about what is or isn't a religious sign, which is kind of the most complicated academic question ever, which is what is or isn't religion. But we have come up with our own format to understand and define what is religion, and most of these signs, especially those abortion signs, are absolutely affiliated with religious tradition, religious argument, religious communities, religious organizers. And so we view them as religious signs. And yeah, we have, Captain Greybeard can comment if he has any data on it, but I think we've probably gotten over 100 abortion signs now that are usually banners. We're talking 6 foot, 10 foot, or 20 foot, like canvas banners that will be thrown over a highway. And I've looked up the stats. If you throw a banner over a highway in Los Angeles, within a week, you will have 1 million people drive by that sign. The amount of free advertising this signage gets is kind of unbelievable in some cities in America.
That's incredible. And so I want to know how y'all came up with the idea. I love the idea of we've got to get these down. Like, these need to get out of here. But why pirates? How did you arrive at that theme? And are there you mentioned having captains of different pirate teams. Tell us the breakdown. How does this work?
Yeah, so it has a really dumb origin story. We originally were going to call it the Atheist Religious Rubbish Removal. That was it. Like, we were playing with names. And it became R, and then we were joking we should call ourselves the Atheist Street Pirates if that's going to be the name. And the Atheist Street Pirates is the name that stuck. And what I really like about it is we don't take ourselves too seriously. It also hints at Pastafarian afterlives, which is hilarious. But ultimately, when the media interviews us and we're wearing eye patches, like, you know, this isn't like the most important thing we do as an atheist community. We did not create a whole new nonprofit just to take down stupid signs in our neighborhood. But when you think about productive things we can do with our religious trauma, which I'm sure you all ask, right? Like, taking down these signs is more cathartic than yelling in the face of a religious person. And we all want to yell in the face of a religious person sometimes, but we need productive outlets. And I think we found one of the most productive outlets that does have a slightly positive impact on society. And what we found is it also encourages people to go take down other illegal signs. You know, we've had some people come to us because they were already taking down illegal signs, and then they found some new religious ones in their neighborhood and then wanted to figure out who put them up, and they found us instead. And we've had the other way. They got involved because they hated the religious signs, and now they are a part of our highway cleanups and they volunteer twice a month. So the opportunity is huge here. And yeah, being a pirate, putting a funny name on it, being playful, I think has only led to this being a positive program rather than a anti-religious program.
Oh, I love that. And I think you're right. It is important too to consider that if you're being featured in the news, there are a lot of people that think that atheist organizations are just mean and nasty and hateful, which is not the case at all. So it's nice if you can make people laugh. I am a supporter of that strategy.
Yeah. I mean, what I've loved is the whole culture that's come out of it. This was completely unexpected to me, because when I was envisioning it, we were just going to be a playful group that occasionally took down signs. And now that I have, I think, 75 volunteers that have come to us in half the states in the U.S., you know, we have named some of our tools. Like, so instead of an extending pole we use to knock down signs, that's a crucifixer. You know, we stickers are some of the worst signs we find everywhere because they're the hardest to remove. We call those barnacles in our community. And we require that when you join our Slack channel and become a volunteer, you basically have a pseudonym. And that's for a few reasons. While we vet all volunteers before they join, we want to protect, but we have knowledge that this is controversial enough to where people will want to out these people and attack them someday. And so to protect their identity, we have an extra layer of you have to have a pirate name when you're in our community. And it's just led to this great culture where we're all having fun all the time.
I love that. I fully support having fun while you're doing good work. And so you mentioned, though, all of the other things that you do as well. Do you want to talk about any of the other projects and programs that y'all do besides this one that people could get involved into?
Yeah, honestly, like, it's funny. This is the one that gets all the press because it's controversial. But I think most of our other community programs are what's exciting and impactful. We have 16 programs that we offer at Atheist United. We're probably one of the larger local community groups in the country. And one of my favorite, what we're going to be doing this year, we're actually going to be doing a camping trip to Zion National Park to look at the stars with an astronomer. If any of you would like to join us, we currently have tickets on sale. We'd love for you to come out. We, the first year, decided to go to Death Valley and we did the exact same thing. We found a moonless night and we looked at the stars with an astronomer. And then the next year we went to Anza Borrego, which is this gorgeous state park outside of San Diego. And we did a rock talk at sunset on a cliff with a geologist. And so these Atheist Adventures are a program we created to challenge this idea of religious experience being a religious thing. Awe and wonder and experiences and memories that you have for a lifetime can be built in atheist spaces. And for us, that's usually nature. That's usually being with community, right? It's pushing yourself on a hike and seeing a view you've never seen before. Those are the moments that present awe and feeling of grandeur of the universe or how small I am in the universe that I think make us feel human. We've also put a lot more time and effort into our recovery and support programs. So we sponsor the Los Angeles Recovering from Religion Support Group, which is virtual. And then we helped support the Smart Recovery Group. Smart Recovery, for those of you that don't know it, is a secular addiction recovery program. So if you have alcohol addiction or other forms of addiction, a lot of programs like AA still rely on concepts like a higher power, where most atheists, most non-religious people do not feel comfortable in that space. The program, the 12-step program, was built over 100 years ago and really often pushes you towards religious leaders. Whether you want that or not. And again, you can still have an awesome secular experience in AA. I'm not going to tell you your experience isn't real, but I can tell you of the hundreds of atheists who have failed in programs like that and are looking for more science-based programs. We sponsor the Smart Recovery Program in Los Angeles. Is there a question?
I've had a lot of callers on that subject of addiction and complaining about, AA. And yes, so I do recommend the smart recovery idea. And many people didn't even know there was such a thing. It's like, oh, it's AA or nothing.
Yeah. Yeah. And it's still new and we need more. If you all are looking for a great way to give back, become a facilitator for smart recovery. You take their training and you can run a group in your city, a city the size of Los Angeles. And we have one support group a week right now. I mean, we should have hundreds of these across the city. But you have to think about the amount of time and effort and money and space that goes into all of these support groups that AA has built over 100 years. And then there's the legal part. We need to get into courthouses because judges actually force people to go into some of these programs. Mm-hmm. And they don't see us secular alternatives as a legal requirement yet. And so I also would encourage you all to support some of the advocacy organizations like American Atheists and Secular Strategies who have written bills to try to guarantee that there are secular alternatives for people like us when you have addiction recovery needs. Other programs, we tried a youth group for a few years. That's really cool. We're one of the only atheist communities that tried a youth program. We started doing Science Sundays. We go to different like science museums every quarter and we get a big group of people together. And we went to the Mount Wilson Observatory, one of the oldest observatories in the U.S. We had 45 people up there. We are doing speaker events. We've always done that. And then we're doing parties. So since the pandemic, we've been trying to pull our community back together. And I hate to say this, but a lot of atheist communities are really boring. They have a lot of lectures because we come from an intellectual tradition and blah, blah, blah. And what I find is, especially if you want young people and you want an energized group, you can't just sit and listen to lectures all the time. You have to do more experiential activities. You have to do more socials. And so what we've done is we decided we're going to start hosting big quarterly parties. So like this year, we're doing a rooftop Halloween party in Hollywood at sunset with live music and food. We did a beach party earlier this year. And then the Street Pirates actually hosted one of our parties. We had a pirate party and we took 250 signs I have in my office, we put them on the white walls of a giant room we rented out, and we had a mock art gallery night.
Oh, brilliant.
So I'll post a link in the chat, but we got national news for putting all of these banners and signs and letting people walk through them. And we even built displays like you were in a museum, so you could kind of understand a little bit more about each one of the signs and their history. It was really fun. So I'll here, the pirate party is in the chat right here. This is all of the displays we did.
So Evan, you mentioned a few times national coverage. Can you tell us any of the, you know, national media that people would know that covered any of your
Sure. activity? Yeah, we've been in Religion News Service, Washington Post. We've been on the local NPR station, Only Sky. We've been on US News, Univision. We've been on a few podcasts like Dave Warnock, who was mentioned earlier, The GD Show, and Free Thought Radio by Freedom From Religion Foundation. Spectrum News, which is, you know, your like local internet provider, happens to have a TV station. And then most recently, and my favorite, is BBC World Radio. Wow. Did a whole documentary feature on our community. They have a whole series they're doing on faith communities and interesting projects of young people. And they did a beautiful 30-minute documentary in our community and the Atheist Street Pirates. Yeah. So
that's, what was the tone of most of the coverage?
Yeah, so it's been mixed, mixed bag for sure. I have a PR background, so this has been really easy to navigate, but there's two sides. So one is people think it's really cool and they want to cover it honestly. And these are the people we love. And it's like free marketing for us. They come, they usually go on a pirate hunt with us. We take them around. We take down 10 signs with like a group of people. They get a bunch of video or photos or audio. And then they build a nice little story about our fun team. The other side of media is those that are looking for confrontation that they know will sell eyeballs on their website or their video. So
yeah, that's what I was worrying about, because everything's about eyeballs and confrontation and anger these days.
And so for them, they're clearly pitting atheists and religious people against each other. And they like to frame it in the, we're just asking a question, like, should atheist street pirates exist? Or like, to the point where some of the questions that have obvious answers, like, is this illegal? They leave open to questions so that there's more debate. So we've definitely had some frustration. We were in a Snapchat news story. There's a Snapchat reporter in Los Angeles who did a piece, and she gets like 30,000 young people who see everything she does, but it was all framed in questions. And so even though I was telling her facts the whole time and being like, here's the reasoning behind my facts, here's the legality behind my facts, and she still would be like, what do you think? And
right, we report, you decide.
Yeah, exactly. But we've gotten better at kind of knowing which media that's going to be before it happens. But the bigger television and radio has come in the past year. And so like Univision, we had to learn. We couldn't tell which way they were going to go until it was out. And then it was clear. They put us up for a little bit. And then they interviewed three religious leaders who attacked us the entire time.
Oh,
So that happens. You know, we still think it's better to get the word out, but it definitely is frustrating when the media doesn't do their homework.
Yeah, or where they have done their homework and they actually just want to generate a controversy that doesn't exist. That's even more frustrating, I imagine. Yeah.
Well, and I won't mention who, but we even had atheists comment in one of those media pieces because they were asked by the media and they didn't do their homework and started critiquing us without even knowledge about the First Amendment in the United States. So if you find that one, you can critique them with me, but everyone should do their homework before they speak to the media.
That seems like generally a good idea.
Yeah.
I love it. Well, what can people do, like, if they want to get involved, if someone wants to be a street pirate, an atheist street pirate, is that something that people can just get involved in? Is there a training? Are you expanding into new areas? Do you have to live in the United States? What can people do?
Absolutely. I just put a link in the chat. If you go to our website, our Street Pirate website, we have a little form you can fill out that says join a local crew. We have over 20 states that we have little Slack channels for. And basically, if you say you want to be a volunteer, myself or Captain Graybeard, one of our top volunteers, will give you a call. And we will basically make sure you're not a weird religious person trying to get into our group. And we will give you a quick training on how to be an atheist street pirate.
Has that ever happened? Have you had?
No. It's not happened yet. We're prepping for the worst, but it is definitely not something that we have evidence is in the works. We give you a quick training on kind of the legality. We do not want to be associated with you if you're going to be breaking into people's private property and taking down their crosses. we go over liability a little bit, and we give best practices, and then we onboard you for what it will be like to join our online community. And then you get to work. And like most recently, we had a guy in Atlanta who's already taken down hundreds of signs in the first month that he's been involved. We've had similar in the Washington area and the Kentucky area. Like it's been mind blowing. I never expected to have such passionate volunteers join us.
And if people go through the training and they fail, do they have to walk the plank?
Walk the plank. Yes.
I'm sorry,
yes.
I had to say that.
So it's super simple in that sense. We want you to get involved. We think we can build a really thriving online community around this. We apologize. There's so many notifications, but we are finding lots of signs every day. One thing we didn't mention is we actually go on Google Street View and try to confirm how long the sign has been there. So if you spot a sign in your neighborhood, for instance, we'll go find it to put it on the map, but we have access to Google Street View's photos of that street. And depending on your region, Google Street View usually drives by every 6 months to a year. So we can usually tell in the past like 10 years how long the sign relatively has been up, which is how we.
Are there archive versions? Is that what you're saying?
There are. Yeah, there are accessible archive photos whenever you look at a screen capture on Google Street View. So we can go back and see that sign's been there for 2 years and it wasn't there 3 years ago. And so we've actually. If you look at our map and click on some of them, we'll tell you if it's been up for a while. And so we also have map masters. If you're interested in joining our map team, you can help us track some of the people who brag about their signs and help them get on the map, help us do some of the Google Street View work, help us come up with new policies for how we manage the technology side. So tons to do there. It's very exciting. I would love for you all to get involved if you're looking for something fun and silly and goofy that you can do remotely.
What percent of the signs are Christian?
So for us so far, 99.8.
Wow.
America has an evangelical Christianity problem.
So in the pre-show we were talking about, you have seen Jewish signs.
Yeah, so this is very recently, meaning in the past 6 months, we have found our first Jewish and Muslim signs. The Muslim sign is attached to a numerology conspiracy theory, and the Jewish signs are attached to a Hasidic cult, basically, in the city. We expected there to be a lot more religious diversity when we started the program, but the United States just has an evangelical Christianity, Christian nationalism
problem. How about Scientology?
Not yet. They just own buildings here in LA. They don't need the signs.
So I know that they put signs up because I've seen photos of this because I have skeptic friends who've infiltrated them and they've had photos. You know, their thing is they put a street sign on a poster board or something outside their building on the public street saying, you know, free personality survey in this building. Is that legal to do that? Could you
We'd have to look into whether it's, you know, legally their land or not. This is an ongoing dispute I've seen in Los Angeles, at least, where they have a lot of property.
Yeah.
Like I once walked by their building at night and a homeless guy was sleeping there and their speakers started shouting at the homeless guy to get off the sidewalk. And so like, to me, I'm confused about the legality.
Yeah, that should be public property.
I do know some sidewalks, technically the owner of the property nearby it has the responsibility to keep it clear and clean, according to some local ordinance.
Oh, yeah. That's the way it is in my local community. I thought that's the way it is. So I'm responsible if it gets icy and I don't clean it, someone trips on it, but it's not my sidewalk. It's a weird
I would
mixed
agree
thing.
With you. So we might need to talk to a lawyer if I spot a sign like that, but we haven't seen any of those yet. We are definitely on the look for them. Actually, a new thing we found is parody signs. We have found, especially in Los Angeles, I would love to find more in other cities, but for instance, my favorite, we have this sign that's kind of everywhere in LA that says Jesus, the way, the truth, 14:6 or whatever. And above it, somebody posted, Jesus is, hold on, let me get this right. Jesus is coming inside me, which I love. And then
nice.
We have another one, some stand-up comedian.
Or the coming just spelled differently with Jesus is coming. Yes.
Yeah. And then we have some comedian posted a bunch of We Buy Souls signs all around Hollywood. And there's a phone number you call and it's just a voicemail. It's kind of making fun of you.
No, that's legitimate. I actually sold my soul online to buy an ebook. And
Well,
I'm one of the few people I absolutely know don't have a soul, because if I ever had one, I sold it. So
you're incentivizing the signage. Shame on you. Yeah.
but what book did you get, Rob? I need to know what was worth
So this
your
was
soul.
Advertised. The author read the first chapter on the Thinking Atheist. This was probably 10 years ago. And that was part of, you want to read the rest of the book and you can have it for free. And you go online and you did it and you downloaded it. So that's how that worked. I don't remember the name of it, but it had to do with a time machine. The U.S. government had invented a time machine to prove that Islam was wrong. They were going to go back to Muhammad's time. And of course, what turns out is they go back to the crucifixion and there's no crucifixion.
Ooh,
what
subversive.
I want to show you is if you join, you can then keep whatever signs you find. So for instance, like this is one that I love. this is metal. Somebody repurposed a handicap sign, for instance. This is weirdly heavy metal too. It's hard to carry, but this is hilarious, one. And two, it's kind of looks like pop art. So my girlfriend lets me keep it in the apartment. But yeah, most of our pirates have kept the signs and decided, you know, some of them belong on their walls as booty that they have saved over time. So this is one of the perks.
That's a pretty good perk. And for our listeners who are hearing the audio only, can you read what that sign says?
Sure. Yeah, this sign is a metal sign covered in black with white stenciled letters that says, Jesus is coming, are you ready? And then RU is just the stencils of the letters R and U. Yeah, we get a lot of coming puns, I find, with the Jesus signs.
That's great. I was actually going to ask if people got to keep the signs they collected. So that's kind of a cool perk. You're talking me into this. You're selling it. And,
what's the best sign? What is the best sign?
That's easy. If we have one sign that was completely misspelled, and it changes the context and it's wonderful. So this was it's probably like an 8-foot banner and it was handwritten. I spotted this driving home from, I think Vegas or Phoenix or something. And it says, Jesus is King, accept it. And accept is spelled wrong. That's probably my favorite. And you can actually see a photo of that if you click on the news piece I posted earlier.
Product, a guy made the sign, product of homeschooling. There we go.
Yeah,
that's great.
Well, anyways, this is a fun program. I definitely am looking for volunteers, but I think the bigger pitch, what I would encourage for all of you is look for a local community. You know, this got born out of the fact that we got together regularly and we're asking, what does it look like to do advocacy as atheists? What does it look like to fight for separation of church and state? And this is a silly project. Like, I'm not going to tell you this is the most important thing I do with my time. But I will say we can fight back in interesting ways and fight for secular democracy in interesting ways when we're gathered in community. You know, the value of this program probably isn't even all the silly signs we collect and take down. It's the first data point. It's the first map ever created of the phenomenon of illegal religious propaganda ever created. Someday a researcher will be able to use this map to speak to Christian privilege in our society. And nobody would be able to do that until a few of us were dumb enough to start making a project out of this. So really encourage you to find a community, get involved, create your own fun projects that can challenge religious privilege, and ideally build a communal space where you all can try to improve each other's lives.
I love that. That speaks to me very much.
Do you guys have a Wikipedia page yet?
Not yet. I'd love a wiki. We're going to create our own TikTok someday for this.
we have someone here who does a lot of work on Wikipedia. Rob, this sounds like a job for you.
Or my team, it might be. I will have to give them the information.
We have a lot of press you can use as sources now.
That's what we need.
Ooh, excellent. I'm going to be excited to check in with Rob next week and see what's happened on that front.
That would be amazing. Our map tells us how many people have viewed our map. And with all the press we've gotten, we have 65,000 eyeballs that have seen our map since we've launched it.
So I'm DMing you in the chat my email. So please send me an email with like all the links to anything that could be used as a citation.
Okay.
Awesome. Oh, that's exciting. Okay, well, we are close to getting to be time for a Q&A, but before we go to that, Evan, is there anything else that you want to share with us?
I think that's it for, I mean, my expertise is community building and creative PR. If anyone wants to talk about those are the talks I normally give. It's been a pleasure the past 2 years to talk about the Street Pirates. But yeah, if anyone, again, I'm one of the first and only paid atheist community organizers in American history, if not world history, right? Our communities have been small, and most of them got created in the last 50 to 100 years. And to be frank, the last 20 years, most secular communities in America. And so the fact that we have found enough money in Los Angeles to pay me full time to like explore the question of how we build community, has led to programs like the Atheist Street Pirates. But ultimately, we're just trying to figure out like, how do we help each other? What are we doing with our time on this planet? How do we fight religious privilege and build secular democracy and community?
Excellent work. Well, where can people find you if they want to get in touch with you or learn more about what you're doing or your projects or what's going on? Where can they go?
Cool. We're on every social media platform. You can find Atheist United, Instagram and Facebook. We're probably most active on. Me personally, I'm also on Instagram and Facebook. And my email I will put in the chat for everyone.
Perfect. Thank you for doing that. And thank you for coming on and talking with us about this. This is so interesting. I'm so excited that we got to talk about pirates, but also I'm really excited for the work that you're doing and what you mentioned when we talked earlier about your discussion saying, you know, you mentioned that you can build community without following the old religious models of community building. We don't have to replicate the same things that have been done in religious communities. And it seems like you've really taken that idea and run with it and made it fun.
Yeah, I think this is one of the most interesting questions about communities, which is what model we do. And I think most of us come from religious backgrounds. And so we imagine we should organize it like a church or a synagogue or a mosque. And that's intuitive. I'm not going to tell you you're an idiot for doing that. But what I want to challenge you to do is also think far beyond it, because we have no traditions that we actually have to do. We have no holy books. We don't have 2,000 years of baggage. We can literally organize in any way, shape, or form we want. We can build programs about whatever excites us. As human beings, and we can directly address any of the challenges we're facing without having to sing a certain song or wear a certain hat. So that's what's exciting to me. We've started to look at models like LGBT centers rather than churches when we think about a building we're going to have someday. We started looking at feminist bookstores rather than synagogues for how you might like interact with people and what type of programs you might build. So I want to keep challenging us to be creative, to use the freedom that comes from a non-theist perspective to look for new ways to organize. We can and should learn from institutions that are 2,000 years old, but we also shouldn't copy just to copy.
Yeah, absolutely. Such great points. This is why you get paid the big atheist bucks.
Big bucks is not a thing.
A little bit of an exaggeration. Well, that's great. I really am impressed with the work you've been doing and am excited about this. I may have to volunteer. That just seems like too much fun to me. Now, are costumes allowed? Can people dress as pirates while they go take down
Highly
signs?
encouraged, highly encouraged. Yes. I can't tell you how many Satanist t-shirts I get pictures of when people are taking stuff down. We have eye patches I'll give you if you're ever in Los Angeles. And we do award some of our top pirates now each year at our pirate party.
Oh, that's amazing. Okay, that is just so much fun. I love it. Okay, I'm now gonna go down a deep hole here, and you may be hearing from me. That just sounds like too much fun.
Wonderful.
Okay. Well, on that note, what do you say we do some Q&A?
I love that.
Okay. So, let's see. Rob and I will trade off. We've collected a few questions during the course of the conversation, and we'll get through as many as we can. And if anybody else has a question, feel free to drop it in the chat. We'll try to get to it. So, the first question, you may have already addressed this to some extent, but people were wondering about kind of the tone of the signs that you find. Is it more commonly things that are sort of a positive message, like Jesus loves you, or do you get more of the aggressive, turn to Jesus, obey, or hellfire, kind of signage?
So I want to challenge the framing a little bit that phrases like Jesus loves you are innocuous.
Yeah, and that
We
was my unfortunate phrasing.
no no no
That
no
was
no
a poor
we
choice of words.
no and we often fall into this in our community all the time, but I actually want to challenge people to think about the meaning behind that phrase, right? Like if you're having a conversation with somebody that disagrees with you and they say Jesus loves you, like they're saying fuck you. They're not often saying like, no, really, like I love you no matter what, and I want a pluralist society where you're my equal. Like they're trying to fix you because you're broken, and the way to do that is for you to find Jesus. And so ultimately, even though the words themselves aren't disgusting, the idea is, and I want to challenge people to think that way, because it really changes the frame. And to me, at first, when I saw those signs versus Jesus saves from hell, I was like, oh, these aren't too bad. But now I've seen hundreds of them. And when you see hundreds of those signs and they're on every telephone pole and every, they're close to schools and they're near mosques, and you really think about the context behind them, they're trying to fix you. They're trying to say that the only way to be good in our society is to be like them. And I actually find that extremely toxic. So
All I can say to that, Evan, is bless your heart.
also, yeah, also fuck you. So yes, I think that's the first way to look at it. And then second, if we are looking at the spectrum of signs, we do find a lot of just like Bible quotes, a lot and a lot of just Bible quotes. They're usually around Jesus and his resurrection, or really important parts of the Bible to evangelism. I mean, these signs, if we put them in context, are a form of evangelism. And so usually the messages that are attached to them are evangelist messages. They're not the like, Jesus loved everyone and we should all kumbaya. I've never actually seen one of those signs. I wish I would, Actually, to the contrary, I've found progressive Christians who have come and joined our atheist street pirates. So one of our press
Oh.
pieces, actually, I have a pastor of a community who went out and helped take on signs with us. I have an interfaith
Wow.
leader who is a local Hindu and Sikh. It's a weird identity, but he has joined us and taken down signs with us. We're finding that what we're doing actually has pluralistic value. We're finding that even there are religious communities who hate these messages and find them not Christ-like, who find them Christian nationalist, and they want to fight those as well. So we weirdly built kind of a coalition off of this that was unexpected. But yeah, I we the abortion signs come in waves. The hate signs come in waves. I find much more just like the consistent mass printed Jesus the way the truth signs and Jesus saves signs.
How about specific end times signs?
We haven't seen as many of those, but I imagine those exist in places we're just not yet. And that they might pop up around certain resurrection claims, or rapture claims. So you know how some of these communities predict the rapture's coming next year, and then they all get excited for it, and then they have to push it back another year or another 2 years. So I imagine we'll catch one of those eventually, but I don't think they're actually as coordinated as just the ongoing signage people. I think those people will hold their signs. They won't leave them behind. We'll see though.
All right. So somebody has a question that said, in my city, I don't know where that is, there is lots of religious graffiti, as yes. in spray paintings, drawings, basic graffiti of religious stuff. How do your street pirates handle graffiti? It's not as easy to take down as a sign or a piece of paper.
Yeah, we've just recently, as of this past year, started to track graffiti. We didn't have any examples of it before, but we have spotted a few graffiti Jesuses, and we've started to add them to our map. So even if we can't remove them, we want them. I kind of want to emphasize the map is the first and foremost goal of our organization. We want there to be data. So when we talk to policymakers about this issue, we can show that this isn't some rogue thing and there's two signs and we're just being whiny. Like, no, this is a coordinated effort by hundreds of people. And there are thousands of signs on just the West Coast. So what we want you to do is track it no matter what, even if you can't take it down, if it's in a place you can't reach, you don't have the materials to do it. And then if you'd like advice and ideas for how to do that, we have encouraged people to never put up your own messaging. If we spotted an atheist sign, we would take it down and add it to the map. What we want you to do is just cover it up with something like an I Heart New York sticker. You know, find something that is kind of meaningless that you could cover it up with, maybe a little spray paint or paint. A lot of the stickers, for instance, we usually can't get, we just damage. You kind of scrape off as much of the message as possible because it's almost impossible to get a full sticker that's been there for 2 years. But yeah, so I don't have the most specific advice other than we want to track it. And then we'll figure out what to do with it as a team.
Okay, okay, great. You. Yeah, thanks. Well, let's see. We have another question that is asking, a neighbor on my street has in big letters on their front window, God loves you. It's in bright letters, impossible to miss. How do the pirates handle religious stuff that may be on someone's private property, but can easily be seen by the public?
Yeah, we don't. That is legal. Yeah, so we are very distinct that we target public property with our program. It is annoying, but your neighbors are allowed to legally be annoying. And so the best counter to annoying free speech is your free speech. So I would encourage you to figure out a way to communicate something back.
There's a church in my neighborhood, which I always have to drive past. And they've changed it now to electronic board. But up until recently, they had one of those whiteboards in the edge of the property that you could almost reach leaning over the fence, but not quite, with like, and they'd rotate the sign with these black letters that they would have to change every weekend, you know, advertising a bingo game or a potluck dinner or whatever. But often if they had nothing planned, it just said, God loves you. And I often wanted to sneak in there and put it in small print, except if you don't love him back, then he'll send you to hell forever. But I guess that would be illegal.
Yeah, stay off other people's private property.
Evan has to remind people of this constantly.
Yeah, I am not associated with people who go on other people's private property. You do what you want on your own.
Not saying I ever did it. I just really wanted to.
But, you know, the official line is the atheist street pirates do not engage private property.
All right. Terrible. So the next question somebody had in the chat, you might have mentioned this, but are the street pirates only in the States, or this person was in Canada, so that's why they're asking.
Yeah, we haven't found many signs outside the country because all of our volunteers are in the United States right now. Recently, I actually was in France and I found two stickers near the one by the train station and one by the Eiffel Tower. And in Copenhagen recently on a trip, I found a parody sign we decided not to add to the map. Some artist was saying he saved, kind of like Jesus saved. It was very clever. We were confused for about a day until we translated it correctly. And then we do have a Flying Spaghetti Monster spotting in Canada right now. So we're still debating whether that's religious or not.
Not an official religion, at least in the United States. I don't think it's in Canada
it's
either.
Legally recognized by Australia. So pick or choose.
Australia, you get that condemned.
You can, there was a guy famously who fought to wear a strainer on his head for his ID photo in Australia and won as his religion. So I wouldn't write it out parody religions and real religions are really hard to tell the difference between. So we're still defining what religion is in our program, and we've added it to our map, but maybe someday we'll not have it on. We don't know. So yes, if you spot them in Canada, we're still going to do some extra due diligence on that, or we're going to ask you to if you live in that country. If we're a bunch of Americans, we don't know Canadian law, and frankly are not the best people to look up Canadian law. So we're going to start with mapping it, but whether it stays on the map long term or moves to questionable legality is up to the amount of research you're able to help us with.
Excellent. Okay. Well, we have another question here that is about community building. Yeah. And this person is asking, given that public social groups that are intent on growing a community have low barriers to entry, sometimes this can attract all sorts of problematic people that get into that community. And so they're wondering, how do you successfully grow a community while preventing the sometimes chaotic minority from undermining the cohesion of the group?
Yes. Ah, community building questions. Okay. This is an awesome question. It's really, really hard to solve. I think what you need to do is not be afraid of telling people who you're building the community for. So some people might hear that as segregation, but I don't mean that. What I mean is knowing your target audience extremely well and speaking to them constantly. And speaking them to them in a way where people who are not in that target audience will know they're not in that target audience. So what I mean is, if you and the leadership of your community have organized around maybe some core values, like some social justice issues or some separation of church and state issues, and you happen to have someone in your community who shares the identity label, like atheist, but not the values, they're welcome to check it out. But if they're going to be a leader in that community and stay active in that community, you have to get on board with the values or you got to get out. And I think the best way to do that is to constantly hammer what the values are, constantly hammer why your group exists, where they can go if they want to go do something that's counter to what your group does. You know, your group will never be everything to all people, especially not all atheists. What a cranky group. You should be very specific to serve the people who your group was designed to serve. So, like, again, you can be welcoming with who checks out your group, but you shouldn't be welcoming to everyone staying in your group. So I say constantly, constantly message who you are, what you're doing, why you're doing it, and tell people, like, if you have hard lines in the sand, you know, if you don't debate trans rights in your community, just say that. Just say, we don't debate that. There are communities that debate that. We don't. We've taken a position. If you want to be a part of this community, this is the position we've taken. It's not that you can't debate that personally. It's not that there aren't places that we might debate that in the community. But in these places, with this structure, that's not up for debate, right? And people freak out when I say that about trans issues. They don't freak out when I say that about separation of church and state. So we clearly have issues that we've made decisions on. When I say that about science education, nobody debates me on that. So each community decides what issues are important to them and what values they organize around. What I think we need to get better at is not going too far with our concepts of egalitarianism. We don't have to have space for everyone's voice at every moment, at every table. You need to know what you're organized for, structure around that, constantly remind people of it, and show them other places that they can do things that might be contrary to the group if they don't want to be a part of this group. And yes, we are supportive of trans rights, radically so.
Excellent.
I got a sticker you can have if you join our community. I think I got one right here. This is our Atheist United for Trans Rights sticker. If you'd like one, come join our community.
Oh, I'm signing up now. And do you want to say a couple of words about why that is an important position that Atheist United has taken? Obviously, I agree with you that is. Sure. Yeah.
So for us, it's about community. So I mentioned this at the beginning, but I think it should be emphasized. We build community for atheists, not atheism. Atheism is an idea. And if we were just a community around an idea, we would be an education group. But we're not. We're an advocacy group. We're a community group. So we organize around people. And this is the biggest confusion. People read the name Atheists United and they think it's like Atheism United, and they fight us all the time. That is atheist, or that's not atheist. Bullshit. Atheists are people, and people have values and rights, and that's what we exist for. So our organization exists for three reasons: to build thriving atheist communities, to help people express their secular values, and to fight for separation of church and state. And in all three of those, we need the trans community, and we will defend the trans community because the oppression is coming from religion, and atheists are trans and trans people are atheists. That's all we need.
Excellent. And I think that is a great point to end on. We are out of questions from the chat for now, but I bet we might have some more in the Hangout. So before we wrap up, do you have any other thoughts that you want to leave us with?
Just get involved. You know, I think people undervalue organizations like this. RFR is addressing a need that people don't understand how large is in our society. You know, when people ask me, why do you organize an atheist community? Like, I get this from religious people. I also get this from atheists. And I usually start from the story about different people's religious trauma. You know, most atheist communities are not the full diverse spattering of atheists. Like, most of our organizations actually have a lot of people with religious trauma, usually from more conservative religious traditions. And that's because in our society, when you leave a religion and you have religious trauma, you need safety from the group that was oppressing you. You need spaces where you know you can discuss and find a new identity and find people who will support you, regardless of where you end on a religious spectrum. And we can provide that in atheist community spaces when we're doing our job really well. And partnerships with groups like RFR can address, I think, one of the things that we struggle with in atheist communities, which is talking about religion too much. You know, like, if you want to go talk about religion, join an atheist community is the joke. And that's because there's so much trauma in our community. We have to talk about it, right? We are the canaries in the coal mine around religious privilege in society. And so when we're constantly faced and bombarded with religious privilege, when we're dealing with our own trauma, you have to talk about those. And RFR has created a program that creates a separate safe space to talk about those that allows people who don't want to talk about that all the time to still build community. So to me, every local community and RFR should go hand in hand. And yeah, if you don't, please support this organization with a donation and check out a local community. They're not all going to be as awesome and cool as mine is, but you can get involved, take one over, or start your own.
Awesome. Well, thank you for your words and your comments and all that and your expertise. That is really important. And I am so excited to know that there's someone like you out there that is skilled in building community for secular folks that people can join and get involved in. So thank you for your work. This is really important work. And I love that you're making it fun. I know I've said that a few times, but I love that.
Recovering from Religion is a nonprofit organization whose mission it is to provide hope, healing, and support to those struggling with issues of doubt and non-belief. Hope, healing, and support is waiting for you on our website, recoveringfromreligion.org. There you can speak or chat with a trained agent who will work with you through your struggles and doubts or to help find resources that may work for you. You can also find local Recovering from Religion support groups in your area for the long-term recovery work. Resources specifically curated for those struggling with doubts, disbelief, and trauma can also be found on the RFR website. To connect with a secular therapist in your area, go to seculartherapy.org and create an account. If you'd like to support the work that RFR does, you can donate or sign up as a volunteer on the Recovering from Religion website. It's also a big help subscribing to the RFR YouTube channel, our blog, or following us on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. Questions, comments, and suggestions can be emailed to us at rfrx@recoveringfromreligion.org. Thanks for tuning in, and we hope you'll be with us next time on the Recovering from Religion podcast.